offside. He goes the banana. Weddle. Umpire does not move. A chance here for Eamon, who's deadly on the left. It's laser-like.
Moss will get it with a little bit of help from his friends. They are demolishing them at the moment. Well thought.
Joel, the leaper in the pack. He'll quite bring it down. Hurry, kick out of there. McDonald blocks it. Oh, they are just bullying the Roos at the moment. He's got time to just drive it and bomb it long way to get it. This might go all the way. Oh, Lloyd Meek from downtown. It's the big man. It's been 8 months between drinks, but finally, they're a happy team at Hawthorn.
Joy at long last for Hawkers. A really pleasing 45-point win over North Melbourne at Marvel Stadium. The mouthguards made a difference as Mitchell moved to 3-0 over Old Mate. We're back to recap Hawthorn's long-awaited first win of the season. Thank you for joining us on the Hawk Talk podcast. And Tiz, I've crunched the numbers. By my calculations, we're plus 4 points and minus one lid. It is off.
Oh, come on. It was very good, though. A very good day. I was a little nervous earlier. They got the first two goals, and I'm thinking, oh, goodness, come on, get your game together. And then Sicily sort of, I don't know, he just said the word to the group, I think. They settled, and that second quarter, we just blew them away. Beautiful stuff.
And your boy Connor Nash, he had a point to prove. I mean, a lot of people on social media came for him. They didn't want him in the side.
It's almost like it's a rhythm. To get the best out of Connor. He's that type of person, though, I think, isn't he? He likes to prove them wrong.
Well, you know, I think the stats reflects that the mouthguard message really got through to him specifically, because 32 disposals, but also 10 clearances. So doing the really tough stuff at the coalface, but a team-high 8 tackles as well. This is a guy who made it his mission to be physical.
Yeah, he wasn't suffering a loss. That just wasn't happening. Connor wasn't going to let that happen. There are a couple of moments where he could have had better finesse by boot, but he was really good all day.
The other guy that was really hard at it who returned to form was Jai Newcombe with 32 disposals.
Yeah, they both performed in the same week. Terrific.
Isn't it just something else? It's really quite special when you've got your midfield firing. It's been a while for us.
So before going into the game, like, we've been told they've recruited for the midfield, North are going to have the better midfield. It's going to be tough in there. It was all one-way traffic, mate. We were too good.
Yeah, it wasn't so much a concern by the end. But what I like about this win is it was quite emphatic. And I mean, it was 17th versus 18th. It was a schlockbuster, as I flagged on our last episode. But what the result did was it really put quite a gap between these two teams.
The most obvious change that worked early was Harry Morrison. He seemed to be getting touches at will. Lovely goal from him in the first quarter as well. And also the first quarter from Jack Gunston. Oh, Jack was just everywhere for about the first 10 minutes, exactly what we needed.
Yeah, restoring a bit of experience to the side. I'm not sure it's a coincidence that, you know, we fared well with that improvement in that area, that adjustment. I thought Morrison and Gunston definitely had a very notable impact, and Gunston would have liked a better output on the scoreboard. I think he finished with 1-3, but it does make a difference. You know, he's been around such a long time, and that experience is invaluable to such a young side that's finding its way.
Just about everything we did worked on the day. Like, Lloyd Meek kicked 2 goals and one from the centre square. And...
Well, mate, I've got out my Jack Fitzpatrick branded tape measure, and I think it was actually from full back.
Oh. I'm just so delighted for them, because obviously at the start of the game they were nervous again. They didn't start well, but then they pushed themselves into the contest and showed that they were far too good for North. Far too good. Across the park, North didn't have a winner.
And thank goodness for that, because I'll admit, you know, and people can listen back to the last episode, I had my doubts. I was nervous, but I always get nervous playing North Melbourne because I hate them so damn much. So I'm so glad that Hawthorn got the win. But it was about turning up the hot plates on them. It's about applying that pressure and really coming to play. It was a different sort of look for Hawthorn than what we saw against the Suns. There was a different MO, and the pressure was there.
The pressure was good. The pressure was very good all day. But We've got a question from Juliet here, and she's just saying, is it us or is it them?
Yeah, the exact question, the wording of it was, were we much better or was North just diabolical? Well, I can answer the second bit.
You know, your opposition only play as well as you let them, and we saw in the first few minutes, we were letting them play. And then we decided that we weren't going to even let them have the ball. And that was the difference. We didn't give them time and space.
Juliet draws attention to the fact that there were missed kicks and handballs that North couldn't quite take advantage of. But I just think we're a class above. Unfortunately for us, there's always, from here, going to be better opposition than that. You know, we've got Sydney coming up. They ain't North Melbourne. That's for damn sure. I watched a bit of the Swans in action against the Suns, and I think we're up against it this week. No doubt about it.
Yeah, they kicked away early in that contest, and no, their ball movement is crisp. We're going to have to be on our toes again at 4 o'clock on Sunday. But let's dwell on this win, mate. Let's dwell on this win. And there was a question I had for you. Why was D'Ambrosio taken out?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm not sure why he was taken out of the game. I mean, Champion Data has ranked him as, you know, the number one wing in the game, comp-wide. So that's what he had. That's the form he had coming into this game. So I'm not sure why he was the guy to make way for Hustwaite.
Hustwaite's, you know, finding it a bit hard to get any sort of rhythm to his game, playing a quarter each time he's picked. But it's rough for the fella. But when you look at some of the guys that sacrifice their games, like, Warple was just going head-to-head. He didn't get a lot. And Hardwick, he had minimal touches for the day, really. But at the other end, you got Newcomb, Nash, Moore, who was unbelievable.
Well, let me just sing Moore's praises for a minute, because he was the guy that fronted the media at the airport, coming off the Suns' loss, which was completely dispiriting and disillusioning. And we spoke at length, you and I, about how Sam Mitchell presented in that depressed conference. He was just so, you know, seething might be the word. He was very dispirited by what he'd seen, as all the fans were. And to follow up on that, Dylan Moore is fronting the media at the airport, basically saying, look, it's not good enough and we have to change, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. We're not going to sit out of drills at training.
Not going to sit out of drills, yes.
Which I would expect is a bare minimum for a football club. But anyway, he was the guy that really led by example. Those words meant something. He talked the talk about how there's going to be change, and then he walked the walk with 20 touches, 8 score involvements, and 4 goals.
8 scoring involvements. That's massive. I mean, Jarman Impey was excellent, and he hadn't really hit his straps yet. Sam Frost, I mean, you're going to have to change that shirt or something, mate. We just...
There's no errors to a shirt anymore. It hasn't even made print. It's just not going to happen now.
He's just Mr. Reliable. It's so good to see. And he was taking the game on the weekend too. He must have had a bit of license. Don't get overconfident, Sam. But, you know, he looked really good when he had the ball as well.
A case of Frost Ball v. North Ball. I've heard a lot about North Ball, but not sure what it is exactly. Is it similar to Baz Ball and it's being ineffective and such? But anyway, we had a question. Well, not so much a question from CJT, as they say, but can we get some love in for Frosty? His efforts and output this season have been stellar. He's definitely reduced the amount of terror moments coming out of the back line. He has.
Yeah, no, he's doing beautifully. And I really appreciated how he looked after Sarong back there as well. I thought they handled Sarong well. They never let him get exposed, and they did well with sort of making sure he was in the right positions all the time.
I suppose when it comes to Sarong, the more I see, the more confident I am in him, and that's between Box Hill and his very limited number of senior appearances to date. I quite like the look of him. I think he's got a good future about him.
One of the highlights for me was seeing Sicily decide to hit passes again, that were unlikely. I thought, oh, here we go. This is good. We're starting to get the groove back.
Was it that one up the corridor to Nash?
Yeah.
That was a beauty, that one.
That's the kind of thing. You got to be biting off more than you can chew, but actually doing it, you know you're getting it You're getting the confidence back, yeah?
I want to give a shout out to Connor McDonald as well, who seemed on from the outset. That is the Connor McDonald I've been missing some of this season. 24 touches, one goal, one, and three goal assists.
Love the kid. Hate his second half. What on earth? Is 10 in the first quarter, 10 in the second, done for the day. No, he got three in the third and one in the last quarter. But he had the potential to just absolutely destroy him. But he did it in the first half, I suppose, and that's what he can do. And the aim is to do that for four quarters. And this is, very delightful to see the pressure ratings as well. I mean, North only bested us for pressure in the third quarter, and then we just hammered them again in the last. So, no, it's look, Sam Mitchell wasn't over the top about the victory, was he? He was very measured.
Well, I mean, in a sense, he shouldn't be. It is North Melbourne. I mean, I like that we dispatched them pretty handily. I mean, 45 points is a great result. But at the end of the day, it is the 18th place side. And I hope at the very least this sparks a little bit of confidence. You know, maybe the players get a sense of, okay, this is how it looks when we're on. This is how it should go. And I like that it was as close to a complete four-quarter effort as we've produced this year.
And what did you think about that? Did you hear about that remark that was made? Well done on your victory in Tassie last year, lads.
Oh, North Melbourne's just produced some real popcorn moments for me, mate. It's been fantastic. I mean, why did they win that game? And the fact that we know it's going to haunt them the entire season as they languish in 18th is just, oh, so delicious.
Oh, mate, you're getting a decade out of that feeling. A decade at least. We've been here before when Clarko was in charge of us, thinking, why are we winning these games going into the back end?
Yeah, we weren't in the frame.
And we weren't going to finish last, were we? We were just looking at pick two or three, maybe four.
Speaking of recruits, I want to get to this question from Enns. I've seen both good and bad from D'Ambrosio, Ginnivan and Scholl. So far, though, I think they are positive trades. How are you both feeling with our trade additions now that they've had a few games as Hawks?
I'm very excited for D'Ambrosio. Ginnivan's still sort of finding his feet. I thought he could have had a number of better opportunities against North, but he's very much a team player. Like, I didn't really cotton on how team-focused he was at Collingwood, because he was at the end of the scoring chains a lot of the time. But now you see it, and he loves sharing the ball around, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think it's a major myth surrounding Ginnivan that he's all ego. I don't really see that in his play, and I'm as surprised as you are. I think the fact that he was on the end of so many scoring chains at Collingwood did create this illusion that, you know, he's just the finisher and that's it. But he is quite a good team player. And again, the celebrations are going to distract people from that. I think he's a very handy pickup, and he's slotted into this side very seamlessly, and he gets to live out his boyhood dream. He got to sing the song in the change rooms after the game, the song that he sung as a boy. I mean, that's just a great story.
Yeah, I thought that was beautiful and very childlike in its sort of innocence and the, you know, I dreamt of this as a kid and now I'm doing it. And then we had Meek with his birthday on the Monday, and I'm thinking, okay, that's interesting. And then, it's all very, very childish. I was thinking, you know, maybe we need to grow up, mature a bit. And then I saw Pitnet, and he's all over Taylor Swift's latest album. And he doesn't know whether he can listen to it yet, because it's all about breakups and they had a win on the weekend. So, you know, should he wait until he's a bit down? I don't know.
I'm going to excuse the drive-by on Taylor Swift fans there and move on. I'm not going to take it personally. I've quite enjoyed the tortured poets department.
Just tell her to take some time off. I think she's just trying to squeeze too much out of the emotions. Just wait for some other things to happen and then go back to the songwriting.
Are you saying that she's a lot? She certainly seems a lot, but damn, she can write a song, so I'm all for it. The thing about Pitnet that kind of unnerved me a little bit is that I will grant him liking Taylor Swift's music, of course, I do too, but there was an image I saw of him holding the little golden book of Taylor Swift.
Is that not the album cover?
Not quite.
Oh, okay.
And I thought to myself, does he have kids? Why has he got that book? Interesting. Anyway,
I just thought that was the album cover. Anyway, so back to Enns' question. I'm giving D'Ambrosio you know, a spot in the side, Ginnivan a spot in the side, obviously going forward. And then Chole is more of a placeholder at the moment. I'm not really sure. Like, I've loved his effort, his work rate, but a couple of that monster goal on the weekend. But he's just, I'm still not sure where his ceiling is, and he's still getting the confidence to really one grab those marks.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable doubt. You know, the jury's out still on Chole, and I just want to refer to this question from Tim. He asks us, what are your thoughts on Chole? It was getting to the point against North where the ball would float near him and I could say to my partner, watch him drop this, and be right pretty much every time. Now, I empathise, Tim. I understand. But what I will say is that the recruitment of Chole was obviously by positional need. We knew that Cozzy was out the door, and so we brought in a guy who could play similarly, like a similar position, and also pinch it in the ruck. And I like what I've seen. I have no doubt whatsoever that he is an upgrade on Cozzy. And I don't mean that to be a drive-by of a former Hawthorn player. I'm celebrating that Chole has been able to contribute and contribute well. But I will grant you that he can be frustrating.
Hey, what was your favourite mark on the weekend?
Any of Scrimmer's?
Yeah. Oh, that's a bit boring.
Weddle took some good ones as well.
I particularly enjoyed McGuinness's mark over Sheasel.
I knew you were going to say McGuinness. That was a good one.
I was just like, he's just done that nonchalantly. He's just taken that, going to go and kick this goal. We have seen an absolute turnaround from McGuinness. He's doing very well now.
Yeah, well, we banged on about it for a long time, this idea about incorporating a more offensive component to his game and being more attacking and having impact that way. And I think we're starting to see it, which is a huge plus.
It's an amazing thing, really. He's just starting to time his running, get in the right positions to be able to, because he was doing a job on Sheasel for much of the day, and he's just shown him up. Sheasel should probably be playing in midfield already. I'm not sure why Clarko's keeping him out of the ruck, letting him have 30 every week, not really damaging anybody.
Well, Finn's game made that chorus grow louder. That's all that did. There was already a chorus of people calling for Sheasel to move into the centre, and now that's only grown louder because he didn't really have such a great impact. We had a question from Paul. Do we have an answer to the Finn dilemma? Even in the loss to Gold Coast, playing Finn forward has the bonus of him using his defensive skills to advantage on the opposition's chief distributor, and then using his overhead skills to mark in goal means his opponent has to be accountable too. Well, Paul, I ask you, what is the Finn dilemma? Because everything you've mentioned there sounds pretty good.
The Finn dilemma is, if he doesn't have a negative role, does he have a role? But now that we're speaking about his attacking prowess, which is something that we really hadn't seen even at Box Hill, you know, he then demands respect from his opponent as well.
I need to see more, but yeah, you're right. It is demanding that respect back the other way, and there's been some good signs so far.
Now, what do you think of Wirtle's start to the year? How do you think it's going?
Oh, I think the hype has died down a bit, but that's reasonable. I mean, he's in his second year. I still think he's going to be a gem. I still think he's best 22.
There are a couple of beautiful moments, but he seems to be labouring a bit.
How so?
Well, he just seemed to be doing it easy last year and just making every post a winner. And this year he's just sort of there and people know about him and you get a look in every now and again, but the ball doesn't come to him as easy this year.
No, I suppose not. But then when you have a bit of a breakout debut year, that'll happen. You start to get a bit more attention.
He still put his hand up and do something weird and wonderful, like that beautiful outside of the boot boomerang goal.
Are you sure it was a goal, mate? You sure you don't want to go back to the tape?
No, they're meant to do that when the ball's being run back by the umpire to the middle. You don't need everybody in the crowd to know that they're reviewing it. It's garbage. Kills the moment.
Yeah, I think it spoils some of the theatre, the natural, organic theatre of the game, and slows down everything and just, yeah. They've been overdoing it lately, and I think we have to, across the board, just accept some imperfection. But they're terrified to do that. Umpires, as individuals, don't want to do that anymore. They have the option, that lever to pull, to call a review, and they will, because they don't want to be on the back page the next day.
And what about all the, you know, Aiden Corr was doing his best Geelong defender, by claiming he touched that one as well later on in the game. I'm like, there should be some kind of penalty for guys that claim that they touched it and then it gets reviewed and they were like a foot away from it.
Like a penalty for deceit. We have dissent. Why not deceit?
Yeah. I mean, it's just garbage. Don't need that. Especially if you don't have the skill of Mark Graham. Where Mark Graham clapped his hand. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark Graham clapped his hands and the umpire thought that he actually touched the ball as it went past his hands. Brilliant.
We had a question from Dino. In terms of early season adjustments to the 22, what do you both need to see in the next five games to build some momentum? I'll start. Having Finn makes me more comfortable when I look at the Oppo's list each week.
Is he referring to our next five games? Like, because I'm not sure it gets easier. Sydney, Dogs, St Kilda. Oh, God, they were bad, eh? Port Adelaide and Brisbane. But fascinating thing about St Kilda is Ross Lyon basically said they're going to be shithouse in a pre-match interview.
Is that right?
He's like, no, we've had three this will be our third game in 13 days. So you know how he is. He just sort of says it, but he doesn't say it.
Lower your expectations.
They just walked out and laid down.
They did a bit of a Sammy Draper.
Wasn't that enjoyable? Right in front of me.
Surely you wanted Adelaide to win.
Not really. I can't describe to you the enjoyment I had. I think, is it 17 reasons or 16 reasons or whatever it was, how they get to 17 on the article. I'm just like, that. Nah, that must be enough before we can write the article. 17 reasons why Essendon can be better or something. It wasn't even, we'll win a final. It'll just be like, we'll play finals or something. Yes, I got through two reasons, and that was enough.
it's very distasteful. I don't enjoy it.
If the first two are fabricated, you know, what are they doing for the rest?
I wanted Adelaide to win, but I don't think they deserved it. I watched as they completely fluffed their lines. They had so many chances. It just didn't work out. Anyway, we'll return to Dino's question. What do I need to see in the next five games?
To build momentum, like, it's going to be terribly difficult to build momentum through some of those games. But West Coast looked really good against Sydney. They pushed them over in Adelaide in the gather round. So, you know, it is at the MCG where they've been beaten by Richmond. So they've got a very good game at the SCG. It's just when they travel. Now, that didn't used to be the case. Even when they were really good, the SCG, they would be a bit wobbly. But they're a fascinating side, but they seem to be kryptonite for the way we like to play. But they haven't got their best mids back. So maybe we are going to take some of the confidence into this Sydney game. And it'll be interesting in front of Buddy, because he's apparently showing up.
He is. He's doing a bit of a halftime appearance, and we get to give him a proper farewell.
Why didn't we get to farewell him the first time he left? I don't recall.
We just didn't know it was a farewell.
Have we forgiven him yet, or is that for Sunday?
Oh, you know I have. I love Buddy.
You still love Buddy.
Doesn't really matter anymore anyway. He didn't win another flag. He only won flags with us. He played his best footy in brown and gold. Who cares? Move on.
So he's going to the President's Lunch. If you want to, you can get tickets. Go and listen to him. $4.50 a head.
Yeah, is there a Kennedy Community Centre surcharge? what's the percentage on that? What do I need to see in the next five games? Ethan Phillips, I want to see him because he returned for Box Hill and I think he did really well. Collected 19 touches and 17 marks against a side that was previously unbeaten.
Who was he against, Nick?
Well, I mean, that's a fantastic question, Tiz. I'm glad you asked.
We did beat him by 10 goals, North. I can't believe you've led with Ethan Phillips when Josh Ward was just incredible.
Yeah, he responded very well off the back of being omitted from the senior side. 27 touches, he laid 7 tackles and posted an equal team high 6 clearances. He also hit the scoreboard, finishing with 2 goals 2.
3WBC had him with 2 at the end of the first quarter, which I was very excited about because I'd only seen him kick one. And but him and Max Hall and Callum Brown and I tell you what, Cole Shadia We're holding him back in the twos now. He's definitely premium forward down there.
Yeah, I think I was under the apprehension that he might not get a debut this year for Hawthorn, but I think it's very much in the frame. I'm not saying it's going to happen soon or immediately, but I think by year's end, we'll certainly see him in the senior side. He finished the game with four goals, game-high four goals from 15 touches, reeled in five marks, laid three tackles, six inside 50s, and six hit-outs, and a clearance, because he played ruck for a little bit.
Even Sammy Butler responded as well. And these guys looked really without any shadow of confidence coming out of the side last week.
Yeah, they turned it around in a massive way.
It's going to be tough of you to take out Sarong for Ethan Phillips, but I admire your guts, Nick. I really do.
I did not say that. I did not say
that. Well, who on earth are you going to take out for Ethan Phillips?
Well, I don't know, but Dino said in the next five games.
Yeah, okay.
It's a project, okay? I just want to draw attention to Simon's question here. I have vested interest in this one. Is Max Hall on the radar for the mid-season draft? Hate for him to be picked up elsewhere after being in Box Hill's program. The marvel from Montrose. I flagged this one from way out. Max Hall was best of field for Box Hill, racked up an equal game high, 32 touches, 12 marks, ranked number two on the ground for that stat. A team high, nine tackles, four inside 50s, three clearances and two goals. This kid is something special.
So you're putting him before the Browns?
Not necessarily. No, Cal Brown probably is more consistent
for
Box
definitely.
Hill. I mean, he was the superstar. He was the glue. He held everything together for Box Hill last year, and he's doing it again this year. Both Cal Brown and Cal Porter were very industrious, 32 and 22 disposals respectively. Bailey McDonald bounced back after a very down week against the Suns. And I think he recaptured some of that dash and dare, and he even slotted a goal, believe it or not.
Yeah, and, you know, let's not forget Clay Tucker, who's also Hawthorn listed, and he's just looking very nice.
Yeah, he's progressing very nicely indeed, slow and steady.
Also, we shouldn't forget that Max Ramson was held over and didn't get a game.
That's right, and Tucker had, you know, the bulk of the ruck duties. So I think he performed quite well. Now, the Hawks are going to be in action again Sunday, April 28th, taking on the Swans at Fangio Stadium, Box Hill City Oval. So they take the field at 12:05 p.m. And now there's the question of, for the senior side, just what changes we might make. And to do that, we've got to consider the injury list. Scamosaurus asks, CJ is much loved by supporters and seems like a glue guy in the change rooms, but is this the last year we'll see him on the list if he or we can't get his body right and him start playing football? I mean, it seems like a reasonable question, unfortunately, because if we're talking about injury news, CJ didn't take to the Box Hill side. He didn't take to the field, as was flagged, because he sustained a quad injury. So another 2 to 3 weeks on the sidelines for CJ, and you got a feel for the guy. His confidence must be absolutely shot at this point.
Well, he'd just be frustrated by now and angry. But there's always a spot for a bloke who can go back with a flutter ball, take marks like CJ did. I'd love to see it happen again, but he's had a lot of recurrences now, and it's gone from lower back to hamstring. They've done everything to get him right, so I'll probably give him more time again. But you just don't know, Nick. If he's not doing all the work, then they won't keep him. If he is doing the work, there's a lot of trust there. You've got to be able to say, look, you can't put yourself forward as if you're ready to go when you're not, because things like what's happened may happen. I'm not saying he did, but if the club believes that you weren't ready and you said you were ready, they're often going to be like, oh, well, we can't trust his idea of his body, so either we don't listen to him or we just give him more time. It's a very tough equation to do sometimes.
Whatever the case, a lot of patience required from fans who are very hungry to see CJ on the field again, but it's going to be some time. The good news is that Will Day, at long last, we talk about patience, he is available for the Swans, and so I expect he will be picked this week.
Ooh, well, Sydney are done.
Just like that.
They're on the back foot. Reeves, is he still concussed or?
Well, I've got him listed as a test here. The other guy that's in the frame is Mitch Lewis, who, I don't know, the way they're talking about it, it sounds more unlikely than likely.
That's too early.
Yeah, I'd prefer that they take a cautious approach with him. I don't think they need to rush him back. Speaking of rushing back, this guy's earned it. Chad Wingard is set to be selected for Box Hill this week.
For a half.
For a half, indeed. Indeed. He's been put through his paces for a half, but nevertheless, from that Achilles injury and the severity of it, that is a remarkable turnaround.
Where do you play him, Nick?
Deep forward?
He'd be a bit nervous, I guess, but thoroughly tested at the Achilles. Got to be careful, old Chad.
Old Chad is right. He's one of the more senior blokes on the list.
He is, but it's one of those things, you know. Even Ruffy knew that if he did the Achilles again, he was a lot younger man than Chad, that it's curtains. So it concerns me that it's so quick, but you got to trust it.
Josh Bennett will miss another week with concussion. Nick Watson is still 1 to 2 weeks away. Luke Bruce the same with his groin complaint. Denver Granger Barras is nearing a return in little by little, 2 to 4 weeks. Will McCabe is still 7 to 9 away. And James Blank, as we know, done for the season. So there's your injury list. And so, Tiz, I ask you, Hawthorn versus Sydney at the MCG, Sunday, 4 p.m. Who are you bringing in? Who are you taking out?
Last time up in Sydney, we were absolutely non-competitive. I don't know if you recall that.
Oh, I do. I didn't like watching that replay.
But I think, you know, we'll have a much better show this week. I think there'll be a bit of confidence through the ranks, and Sydney are playing above themselves. Sort of, they bookended that game, didn't they? Gold Coast had a bit of a go.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, just outclassed the Suns in the end.
So if Will Day comes in, who are we dropping? And we just look at the stat sheet and we think, oh, Hustwait, go on. So Hustwait goes back to the twos.
I mean, look, he probably does. Who's going to be sub is the question. Because you probably don't want it to be McKenzie, but he's likely.
Let's say Hardwick moves back because he's got better opponents. Maybe one of the running defenders. I'd love to see Mitch Lewis back, though. That'd make it a lot more interesting against Sydney. Unfortunately, I don't think that'll happen.
No, I think it'll be too premature. And I don't know, the cloud that he's been under makes me think that they need to be cautious.
Have they given the 23 out at Sydney yet?
I'm not sure.
Surely they haven't.
Why don't we just have Buddy enter the fray, WWE style? He just does a bit of a run-in and plays for Hawthorn. It's a face turn.
It'll be nice to see Buddy back. He's a very nice man. He is. But makes poor decisions sometimes.
Speaking of poor decisions, I want to highlight something that I noticed in our social media rundown here. We have a mission, listeners, should you choose to accept it. We would love for you to spare a moment to rate and review the show, be it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Now, I really want to emphasize how much it would mean to me for you to leave a glowing review on Apple Podcasts specifically, because right now, amid all the 5-star reviews, there is a 1-star review from someone who clearly has a bee in their bonnet, and it's right there when you look us up.
Is it?
Yep. It's, you go on Apple Podcasts, and it's one of the three that's right there. The other two are 5 stars, but this one is 1 star, and I would love for one of our listeners to please bump it. Please, if you love the show, sing it from the mountaintops. Please write us a review because it's getting under my skin.
Oh, it's the harsh reviews that make you better, right, Nick? You know, reviews are a gift. Isn't that right?
5-star reviews are a gift. 1-star reviews are, I don't know. They seem petty somehow. I mean, if you don't like it, you can easily not say the harsh thing and just move on. I mean, that's fine. That's also an option available to you. What I will say is that the majority of our reviews have been glowing and they have been 5 stars. And the people who have taken time out of their day to do that, it really does mean a lot to us, as you're likely hearing right now.
We've got a lot there, Nick. It's hardly moved it. We're 4.9 out of 5. Don't worry about it. Negative feedback is sometimes some of the best. That's what I got. When you look for a restaurant and you see a 5-star review, do you read that one? No. You go, where's the 1 and 2 stars? And if the guys seem like they waited too long or they seem like an asshole, you're like, this place might be all right. Wouldn't worry about this. But if the two-star review has, I found a mouse in my food, then you're like, nah, they're probably right about that. I'm going.
Meanwhile, we'd also love for you to join us over on our social channels. So good to enjoy the first win of the year with everyone. Come and join the conversation on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And finally, we're able to put time into this show thanks to our proud, passionate, and paid-up Patreon subscribers, the listeners who support us in a very real and meaningful way. A massive thanks to each and every one of you. For anyone who's not up with Patreon and what it's all about, essentially, you can get a ton of exclusive bonus content, an entire archive of extra Hawk Talk podcast that's available right now, all for just a few bucks a month. All the details are at this address, patreon.com/hawktalkpod. That's patreon.com/hawktalkpod.
Well, quite a successful footy club this week. Did the women win again? Because they're just fairly indomitable.
They are unstoppable at the moment. It was 77-27, so a 50-point win to make it 5 on the trot. The senior Hawthorn side aren't the only team that can break open a game in the second term. That's exactly what Box Hill VFLW did. They cruised to a 50-point victory off the back of creating a nice 3-goal buffer in the second term, but then they just ran away with it. And like I said, 5 wins on the trot. We're 5-0 to start the season. 2 games clear on the top of the ladder. Really like the form of Tamara Luke, who finished with 3 goals. AFL-listed Hawk Bridie Hipwell. She was among the best on the day. 18 touches and 2 goals too. Continues to go from strength to strength. Really liked what she was providing in our last AFLW season in that campaign. And I really liked what she's bringing as a forward target now. Charlotte Baskerin, another AFL-listed Hawk, led our disposals with 25. And defensively, Emily Everest had a big influence on the contest. This is all shaping very nicely, Tiz. Because Box Hill are getting ready to face off against the Swans at City Oval next Sunday. It's commencing at 3:35 p.m. That's actually first taking on second. So that's going to be a big game.
Yeah, I was reading that the Sydney Swans VFLW side are actually quite strong. And they're putting through a few AFL players as well. So it's... look, they're not doing a thing wrong. And it's going to be difficult to go through the season completely undefeated because you just sort of sit at cloud nine and you start waiting for people to come at you. But it's really quite excellent. Obviously, the program they've developed this year is really moving the ball beautifully, controlling the football, and high scoring, which is fantastic. It's exactly what we want to see when we go.
That's the best I've ever seen them. They are in fantastic form. And Sunday coming up is shaping as a super Sunday of football. You've got the AFL, you've got the VFL, you've got the VFLW. So we made it 3 from 3 this past weekend. Hopefully we can do exactly the same this weekend.
Yeah, so where will you be? Will you be at Box Hill or will you be at the G?
Could I do both? No, probably not. I think it'd clash. I wouldn't be at the G on time if I went to Box Hill. Well, you know what? I'll take it off the pod, mate. I'll work it out. Because if I can do both, I will. That'll be a great day out, especially if we happen to win both. The MCG is the non-negotiable because I missed last week, as you know. The comedy show was good, mate, absolutely. But I missed seeing the Hawks get the 4 points.
Result was beyond doubt by about the third quarter, and I'm thinking, how can I get on Twitter and get the listenership to convince Nick that we lost? I couldn't find a way to get it done, but it's there for future reference. I'm going to have to work out how I can sort of engineer it so that you check your phone and you think, oh, we lost to North again.
All I'll say is that I'm so glad that I checked the app immediately at the soonest possible convenience and I saw that Hawthorn were in control and it made me feel good about the club. It made me feel good about our season and how we're tracking. And I hope Hawthorn can capture some of that again this weekend, regardless of the result. Win, lose or draw, this is a season where we just want to see some progress. Hawthorn, Sydney, and what's your tip, mate? Are we any chance at all?
Only if Sydney are off their game. But the way they pulled themselves together last week, like Newcomb and Nash, McDonald in the first half, Sicily working with Sarong. If they bring in Phillips, maybe, because we were undersized last year. But, you know, Dylan Moore as vice-captain, brilliant game from him. And, you know, it was meant to be a side that we should beat. I said that last week. But to do it in the way we did it, kicking 9 on the trot, killing the game off and then holding them at bay. Just beautiful to see.
Definitely inspires some confidence in the Hawks. And you know what? I know Sydney aren't North Melbourne. But, you know, Buddy being there reminds me that when you go to the G, anything can happen. You never know what you're going to get. It might be time for a boil over. Who knows? Did it against Collingwood last year? Did it against Brisbane? Get to the MCG, Hawks fans. 4 p.m. Sunday. We will catch you next week to recap all the action from that game. We are a happy team at Hawthorn.